We are Two Guys Gaming. As always, even though the music says Two Guys Gaming, for now, this is the last month, decade, and it's time to switch things up to slucas.me starting next month. This is One Guy Reading. I'm Sean, Noob of All Trades. Again, for now, I will probably still be Noob of All Trades because this is called Noob's Book Club, but we will be moving to slucas.me, as I just mentioned, starting in June of 2026. And you found Noob's Book Club. And in this series, I am reading and reacting to the book Legends and Lattes by Travis Baltry. This has got to be an all-time record for turnover. I don't think I've ever released two episodes in 2 days before. For those of you waiting for me to wrap up Project Hail Mary, I did yesterday, and now we're jumping right into Legends and Lattes. It's a pretty quick read, so that's the reason that I am able to get it up and going so quickly. Kind of funny story from earlier. My wife saw me as I was downloading the book onto my phone so that I could listen to it. She saw the cover and she said, "That's a romance book." And I kind of gave her a look. And I said something like, it says, no, it's literature classics or something like that. She said, no, I get recommended it to me. She's like, they call it quote unquote soft something because there's not a lot of sex in it. And so I went and I did some research because, to quote The Princess Bride, I don't want a kissing book. I wanted a book where the premise was an orc adventurer decides that they're done adventuring and they retire and they start a coffee shop. I know what it sounds like. Trust me, I was not expecting to be as entertained as I am by a book with that premise. It starts off with, she finishes up her adventuring. She's been adventuring for 22 years. She kills a monster and just walks away before looting the monster. Her companions are kind of weirded out by that because she doesn't really say goodbye. She's afraid that if she does, she'll change her mind and she'll go back to adventuring and she won't move on to the next quote-unquote act of her life. Because she's not looking for one last score. She's looking for a building. It has a lot to do with ley lines and magic, obviously, because it's high fantasy. And ultimately, she's just looking for a normal life. She wants to retire. My buddy and I, back when we played in high school, we had a couple of characters that we followed for an extended period of time. Then we got tired of them, and we wanted to move on, so we retired those two characters. So I sort of understand having that question of what happens in that next stage. We didn't explore it necessarily with our two characters, but now that I've read this book, I think it would be funny to kind of see what those two have been up to and maybe like write a short story updating on the two characters. So that does bring up an interesting question. If you play Dungeons and Dragons or a role-playing game, what if your character decided they didn't want to adventure anymore and they just retired? What would that look like? What would they decide to do with their lives? The first part of the book, as I'm reading, it focuses on the Scalvert Stone. It says that it quote-unquote brings fortune and one's desire near ley lines. That's why she was looking for the ley line, as I mentioned in the earlier, just a couple minutes ago. Viv buries it under the floor. The funny thing is, the book is kind of open-ended, whether the stone is actually working or whether Viv is finally taking what made her a great adventurer and shifting it into something different, something peaceful. And therefore, the quote-unquote luck that she finds by the stone is that she finds the livery, a stables that she turns into the coffee shop. She hires Calamity, her partner, Tandri, her assistant, and Viv talks about her as a potential partner, shows up, and one of her former adventuring buddies delivers the coffee machine to the place right at the end of the section in chapter 6 there. So my question, of course, is the stone actually causing these things, or is it just helping Viv to notice the opportunities that are around her? And is it even doing that, or is it just Viv's mentality has shifted to a place where now she sees these things because she's focusing more on them, and she's, again, she's taken what made her a great adventurer and she's putting that into this next venture, which you often hear from people who started businesses that initially it felt like things were fated and they just kind of fell into place. Maybe that's sort of the author's way of saying that you have whatever it is that's pushing you to do this. And in Viv's case, it's the stone finally giving her the confidence to be able to become the quote unquote manager that she was always meant to be. I don't know. Maybe I'm looking too much into it, but that's kind of how I responded to the whole thing about the stone and that this piece of the book where she focuses on the stone. Another big theme of this part of the book is it's almost as if Viv is building a family. Last year, when I watched the Thunderbolts and Fantastic Four and Superman, I couldn't help but notice that those three movies were about family. They were about different types of family. And one that really kind of stuck with me was Thunderbolts, which obviously connects here because that's very much also about a found family and them learning to trust and work with one another in the context of becoming a team. They never wanted to be a team. They never meant to be a team, but they end up coming together and helping one another and ultimately actually loving one another to become that found family. That's where this comes in. You have Calamity, who's a hobgoblin. It took me a while to kind of make the connection that when they called him a hob, that's what it meant was hobgoblin. But initially he's quiet. He's very skilled at what he does. Viv notices that immediately when she runs into him. She lets him do his job initially before she actually approaches him, which I think he appreciated and respected. Initially, he's skeptical of her dream because this crazy, seemingly crazy orc is talking about coffee, which nobody's ever heard of, and starting a coffee shop. So it's one of those where you think that they're maybe just so crazy that they could pull it off type thing. Their bond ends up being the professional respect that Viv understands and knows that Calamity Cal knows what he's doing, and Cal sees that she has the something, the je ne sais quoi, so to speak, that will allow her to be successful in what she's trying to do. They also have the shared experience of racism in the past, being an orc, being a hobgoblin. They are looked at as lesser than by other races, and that allows them to bond slightly as well. Then Viv realizes that she's gonna need help. She's gonna need a barista, so she puts out a want ad, which was kind of funny. I mean, it obviously makes sense in the context of Dungeons and Dragons, which I continually think about it, obviously because that's my main experience playing role-playing games. But there's always putting up on the bulletin boards. They put up notices for adventurers, and Viv even makes a reference to that when she's writing out what she's looking for her barista, that this time she's not looking for an adventurer or a brigadier or mercenary. She's looking for somebody to help her out, and as she discovers, maybe Tandri can even be a partner in the business, which is kind of cool. When Tandri then shows up, Viv is kind of awkward. It's interesting because it shows that even though Viv herself has been a victim of racism, she turns that outward somewhat when she's hiring and talking to Tandri because she's worried about quote unquote her. Well, Tandri brings up that Viv doesn't have to worry about her quote unquote vamping her customers because she's trying to change her ways, so to speak, and not be evil, which I think is a pretty good nod to the fact that if you took a succubus and turned their powers towards good, quote unquote, or if you took a succubus who was good, then they would make actually a pretty good barista because of the way that they can relate to others. Then we get the dwarf partner adventurer who shows up with the coffee machine. That was kind of a funny little callback, I thought, and it was a bit of a surprise to have the character come back in and be the delivery guy for her coffee machine. I thought that was pretty funny. She does feel a little bit of guilt, but they bond over it and she catches up and she says, make sure that the old adventuring party knows that it wasn't anything personal. And then she, Tandri, and he talk about the coffee machine and her ideas to start the business. And the coffee ends up being the glue that brings them together, I guess, if you want to use a slightly tortured metaphor. When this book was first recommended to me, it was called Cozy Fantasy, which means that it has the low stakes conflict. So the way that I saw it on the audiobook, I think, was it was like the perfect marriage of coffee house culture and Dungeons and Dragons, which is exactly what I was looking for to kind of bring me down a little bit from the stress of everything happening around me. And then I was also reading The Burning God, which if you go through Project Hail Mary, the previous series that I did, I talk about how I had to take a break from The Burning God. And ultimately, I probably won't even finish that book right now. This happens, I was just talking to my kids about it, that I was watching The Walking Dead, and I got to like the beginning of season three or something like that. And I said, I can't watch this anymore. This is just like becoming too real for me. And that's kind of what was happening with The Burning God. Great book, but it's heavy, and you got to be in the right mindset, and I wasn't. So we initially get the conflict pretty quickly. The one of the magical goons shows up and Viv has to follow up on that. And so first the woman says something about how the magical runs things and you have to pay up. And then she's talking to Cal about it later. And she says something along the lines of, do I really look like somebody who is going to be intimidated by these knuckleheads? And Cal says, yeah, that might be true, but your coffee shop is fairly flammable, so you might want to show them that you have a little more bite than that. And she ends up posting her sword in the coffee shop. She wanted to kind of keep it hidden again to put that part of her life behind her, but it's not completely behind you. Is your past ever completely behind you? It's another question to ask yourself as you're reading the book or listening to the book, as I am. There's a part where she's woken up by footsteps on the roof. We don't figure out who that is yet. Is it the magical sending his buddies to intimidate her? Is it a monster who's coming back to try to pull her back in to what she used to do? Like, is she going to have to slay a monster to finally put that part behind her? Kind of as like a as a metaphorical, okay, now things are actually done because I've saved my coffee shop from the monster type thing. I don't know. I guess we'll find out. So there's also the racial prejudice, which anytime that comes up these days, people start screaming about how it's woke. Thankfully, in my searching, I haven't found anybody who says that. I'm sure there are people that say that, but I don't really run in those corners of the internet. So the only time it ever kind of pops up in my feed or on my radar is when people are making jokes about it. And that's usually the only time that I ever talk about it myself is we'll go to a musical, like we went to Six, and I joked with my wife, is this woke? And then we went to Suffs, and I said the same thing because I think the whole argument is insane. But I like the fact that we're talking about these things now, and I wish we were able to talk about them more without people trying to dismiss them or continually bring back the racism that has been so evident in the past. When people say that this isn't who we are as America, I mean, yeah, this is who we always have been as America, and we're trying to change that, and people just continue to throw us back into those times and be like, well, why can't they just get over it? That kind of thing. Anyway, so the main question that you come away with the low stakes conflict is, does the cozy fantasy need the high stakes? Like, do we need the monster to show up that I was talking about earlier with the footsteps? Does it need to be a monster, or can it simply be the magical trying to intimidate her? And then later on, if the stove breaks or the coffee machine breaks or she doesn't get enough customers initially, is that enough for us to stay listening or reading the book? So far, it has been for me. Like I said, I never expected to be as interested in a book about an orc retiring and starting a coffee shop as I was. Like, an entire chapter, they dedicate almost an entire chapter, at least half of a chapter, to the renovation of the stables into the coffee shop, and I was completely invested. It's I guess it hits that primal part of us that any one of these renovation shows do that you watch, where you're like, oh wow, it's amazing what they did with the curtains in that place or whatever. I don't know, but yeah, I was completely invested in it. And as I was listening and as I was thinking, I'm like, why am I so invested in this? Why does this grab me so much? It shouldn't. Like, they're literally just talking about renovating a stables into a coffee shop, and I listened intently to every single word. It's kind of funny. So, at least for me, at this point in my life, I don't need the high stakes of Dungeons and Dragons. Legends and Lattes is right there in my wheelhouse right about now. I want to talk about the world building a little bit because it's the word I'm looking for. It's not light. Light's not the word. It's implied. That's not really the word I'm looking for, but we'll go with implied for now, unless the other word comes to me. So the world bit is implied. It's baked in to, hey, look at that, a pun. It's baked into the story. You know, he talks about the monster that they fight initially. He talks about orcs and dwarves and half elves and hobgoblins and that kind of thing. So you know where you are initially, and then from there, he just kind of starts to build in some of these other parts of the world that are important. Like, Thune is built on the magic ley lines. That's why she picks the town. She says something about how she's only ever been in the town 3 times, and that was just to find a job or to rest. But that's why she picks that particular town, is because of the ley lines and because of the stone that she has that will help her to be successful. The initial hunting for the place that she wants to open the shop, she actually uses a witching rod, which I thought was kind of cool because, again, it takes something that is mundane in real life and makes it seem magical. Like, if you've ever looked for a house, it at times can feel magical, especially when you find that house that you really enjoy and the house that you are going to grow up, or the house that you're going to raise your kids in, that it can feel magical. But he makes it actual magic in the book with the witching rod leading her to the place where she's going to open the store. And I think that is a nice little touch to marry the two concepts. So the entire concept of coffee in this place is foreign. It made me think, because coffee has become so much of my life. I know when I was younger, I used to joke that I would just drink my coffee black, and I actually did drink my coffee black when I was a teenager, just as because I heard somebody say it once. So I was like, oh, you're a man, you drink your coffee black. And I think I was either A, setting myself up for being a real guy, or just making fun of it in some way. But I didn't drink coffee much when I was younger. The only time I really remember drinking coffee when I was younger was at my aunt's house. And that's when I made the comment that, no, I just drink it black, because I didn't know any better. And I drank it black and it was fine, and I still drink it black sometimes. Like, I mostly just put a splash of milk in these days. Listen to me talking about my coffee habits on a podcast. So, there you go. Anyway, when you're younger, or when I was younger, coffee had that sort of mystical quality to it where it wasn't as ubiquitous as it is now. It wasn't a thing then. It was just coffee was coffee. You had a coffee in the morning or you didn't. It wasn't like you had your regular coffee that you went to Dunkin' Donuts or Starbucks or your local coffee shop for. Like, we didn't even have local coffee shops. I don't even know where people got their coffee. I think they just made it at home as all Folgers nonsense that they put through a drip machine. So it's funny to kind of revisit that a little bit in the context of the characters. And she has to explain it. She says it's like tea, but it's not. It has this, kind of nutty, kind of fruity, kind of other flavor. The smell she talks about, which, again, if you've ever been to a coffee shop, it's always the smell. The smell is better than the coffee itself. A lot of times it's like beer in that way, where when you're in a place and they have like an aromatic beer, you're like, oh, this smells really good. And then you taste it and it's an IPA and it tastes like sadness. And sometimes it's the same with coffee. It's like, oh my God, the coffee smells so good. And then you get there and they burnt it and it tastes like crap. And you got to drown it in sugar and milk just to make it palatable. So that whole storyline is kind of cute too, where she has to continually explain to people, and she's like, she finally has Cal have a cup of coffee, which she runs through a pair of hosiery, which I thought was funny, obviously. Cal says something about that, and she's like, it's clean, I don't wear this type, and blah, blah, blah. But he tries it, and initially he's skeptical again, but she notices that he keeps going back to sipping his coffee as they're talking. So obviously he likes that, and that's even before she has the espresso latte machine that she can make magical coffees for them later on. Also, Baltre takes liberties in things that we know, just like he did with the witching rod and searching for real estate. He calls the espresso machine is called a Civino, Civvieno, and it, from what I can gather, it's just a completely made up word. It the intention seems to be that, like, when she uses words like coffee and then latte and then barista, these all sound like completely foreign words to the characters. So I think Baltry wanted to kind of give us that same feeling by calling it a Savino and immersing us in the mystery of what this thing is. And then it arrives in a crate that Rune helps her open it up. And when he opens it up, she remarks about how the gnomish architecture is almost flawless. It's just so beautiful, and everybody that sees it admires it. Tanji basically asks, "What is it, and how does it work?" or something along those lines. And Viv takes the opportunity to say, "Well, it's very simple. It's fire," and she lights the pilot light. "It's water," she puts the water into filter. "It's beans," and then it becomes this whole ritual, which I've heard people talk about their coffee as a ritual. Even my wife kind of makes it feel that way sometimes when she's talking in the morning. She's like, "I gotta have my morning coffee. I gotta have my toast. I gotta scroll Facebook." It becomes this whole thing. Whereas I just put my coffee into a travel mug and take it to work and drink it, and it makes me less edgy and wakes me up a little bit and gets me ready for the day. So I can understand the concept of coffee as a ritual. It doesn't really have that effect with me as much. So that's a little bit, just a little bit on the world building that he weaves into the story and the cool ways that he does so to make it feel magical. And there are new ways to make fantasy than simply just coming up with bigger and badder monsters or villains, as sometimes feels like, and you don't have to throw tits and ass at the problem like Game of Thrones does. I've never read Game of Thrones. It's just what I've heard, what I've seen. I haven't seen the TV show either, but from what I understand, it is a lot of ridiculous violence and sex, which this book thankfully is not, because it is cozy fantasy is what it's called. That's what my wife said. She said something when she said it was a romance book. She's like, "It keeps showing up on my feed. They call it cozy because there's not a lot of sex in it." And yeah, there's not a lot of sex in it, as I just said, but also it's not really a romance book either. Like, there is some, I think there might be some romantic tension between Viv and Tandri at some point, because I think there's that side of it, but it's not like it's a romance novel, so to speak, which is not at all what I was looking for. And I know sometimes things can present as one thing and then become another thing, but it doesn't seem like that's going to become this thing. So what actually makes it cozy? It's low stakes. Viv is taking her treasure and burying it into this new idea, this new concept. So her stakes are high because it's financial, and if she fails, she may have to go back to adventuring, or who knows what will happen. But it's not world threatening necessarily, only her world, not the actual world, and the world of the people around her too. But it's not like a giant dragon that you have to slay or what have you. There's not really any graphic violence. The prologue is the bloodiest part, and that's really kind of glossed over as well, where it's mostly just there to push the narrative of Viv is this badass. She takes this thing down. She, with her party, she then decides to turn her back on adventuring and just kind of walk away. But it's not, and there's no other violence in the book really so far that I can see, and it promises not to be for the rest of the book. There's going to be the threats of violence. Obviously, there's like the implicit threat of violence already, and then I'm sure the magical at some point is going to be like, "Yo, give me your money, or you're gonna meet some tragic end." Sorry, I don't know where that voice came from, but that's how I imagine the magical talking right now. The emphasis of the book instead is on food, and the coffee, obviously, in this case. Home. How do you make your home? Where do you make your home? Who do you invite into your home? And the small joys of turning a library into a coffee shop and celebrating that along with the characters, that first cup of coffee that she makes for Cal, that other latte that she shows to Tandri at the end. It's these small victories that become a huge deal to both the characters and ultimately you, because you're invested in these characters, because he makes you care about them in a way that is very deep and very personal. And that is a really cool thing to do. And even when things aren't going the way of the characters, it's still optimistic. You still feel like the characters are going to make their way out of it. That, for me, like I say, is exactly what I need right now. I need people who are going to win, people who are going to have victories throughout and not have to get beaten down in order for them to happen. Because I'm kind of tired of that narrative that you have to tear things down to build them. I understand that sometimes, yeah, if it's rotten, sometimes you have to tear things down, but you don't even tear it down completely before you start to rebuild it. You just tear down the parts that aren't working or are broken, and then you rebuild from there, right? So that's kind of a narrative that I'm tired of as well, where it's like you have to tear, especially tear people down to build them back up into better human beings. I don't think that's true at all. And I think that's a ridiculous, nonsensical view of the people that our society has. This is my first cozy fantasy book that I've read. It was recommended to me again to kind of get me, center me after all the craziness that I've dealt with. So I don't have any experience in the genre, but so far, if the other books are like this, then I think it's something that I can find myself maybe reading in between episodes of the show. So my big question for you is, have you read the book? Did you enjoy it? What was your favorite part? If you haven't read the book, start reading it. Catch up. Chapter 7 through 14 will be out about a week from now. I'm trying to release them on Friday for this book. So catch up, get up to chapter 14, listen to next week's episode, and maybe we can have a conversation about the book. So in closing, it's not a kissing book. It's a book about an orc who's killed her last monster, and now she just wants to serve a decent latte without the magical coming to take her money. If this sounds like your kind of book, like I said, follow along and stay with us. If not, I'm going to do Contact next, and the girl with the dragon tattoo. And then we're going to do more traditional fantasy with War Wizard. So that's where we're going over the next couple of months. But I look forward to this book. I look forward to any conversation that comes out of it. And I'm going to stick with it and maybe find some other cozy fantasy books to read, like I said. As always, thanks for listening. You can find us, for this month at least, at www.twoguysgaming.net, soon to be slucas.me. I'll keep Two Guys Gaming live for the rest of the year until the lease runs out, and then I will release it back into the Ethernet, finding a way to preserve it on slucas.me. We have articles. My latest articles were some silly articles about Mario. You just have to go to read them to see what I mean. I also did a deep dive on the Fallout TV show. I'd like to do more articles. I usually try to do two or three a month, but I've been more focused on the audio and video stuff. Which, speaking of the video, haha, look at that segue. I have a YouTube, NoobDad131. I have a TikTok, NoobDad76. You can see me there. The YouTube has taken a little bit to launch. I did have one slightly viral video that got like 1,500 views and 30-something comments, but most of them are stuck in the low views right now. I don't know if it's the algorithm hasn't figured me out or I'm just not posting consistently enough or what, but on TikTok, I seem to go semi-viral every couple of weeks. My latest is a silly 10-second video about the server that I built, my home server that I built on Minecraft, which is up over 5,000 views now and a bunch of likes and comments. So yeah, I'm doing a little bit quote-unquote better on TikTok than YouTube right now, but hopefully I'll find my audience on YouTube as well. I will be back with this series, like I said, on Friday. If you want to, get right up to chapter 14, come back then, and we can have a conversation. I will talk to you then. Bye, guys.
We are